Dr. Vitti, let's start by giving everyone an understanding of what this plan really is. My understanding is the magnet system would remain. Parents would be able to send their child to any school within the district as long as there are open seats available at that school, and they have to provide transportation.
Well, that's a good summary. Overall, this proposal is based on this continuing commitment to be child-centric in our decision-making process at the district level. And when we're talking about child-centric, we're talking about children, but linked to children are their parents. And I think most of us would agree that parents are best equipped to make a decision of where their children should go to school. And historically in Duval County and nationally, the only parents that are typically exercising their opportunity of choice are those that are active parents, active choosers, whose children are academically gifted or artistically gifted through our magnet program. And so we have seen thousands of parents exercise their right for choice through magnets, through opportunity scholarships, which allow parents from low-performing schools to move to higher-performing schools, McKay scholarship for parents whose children have an IEP, individualized education plan, going to other schools. We've had No Child Left Behind related transfers, and in what we call special transfers. So parents being able to say, my child isn't safe in this school, I'd like them to go to another school, or they have a sibling and they can go to school with a sibling, or they have an employee, they're an employee in the system and they want their child to go to work near their school system. So the proposal is to say that after the magnet process is over and parents know whether they got the school they wanted to send their children to or not, we would increase the choice option in opening up a window in the beginning of April, toward the end of April, and allow parents to leave their boundary or neighborhood school for another school that is not at capacity, because we don't want to overcrowd schools, so it would have to be 95% or below as far as capacity, and then that parent would be able to go to that school and be willing to pay for transportation or to transport their child directly to that school. But it does not change the magnet process or the magnet criteria at all.
And so under your proposal, this would start for the upcoming school year?
Correct.
That's a quick timeline.
It is. but one thing that we saw, the Choice Expo, which was once called Magnet Media, only had magnet schools for the most part that participated. And this year we expanded it to all of our schools. And what was exciting to hear from parents was that they said, I never realized what my boundary school offered. And they said, I always thought that if I was going to keep my child in Duval County Public Schools or have my child attend a Duval County Public School elementary school, that it would have to be a magnet. But in this Choice Expo this year, I learned that I feel comfortable with my boundary school. So it also allowed principals to recognize what the marketplace looks like right now. This year alone, we had about 9,000 parents opt out of traditional public schools for charters.
That's costing the district money, about $50 million.
Over $50 million. So this is not only about empowering parents to make an educational decision for their children, but it's also a business plan to be more marketable in an environment that is driven by choice. And whether someone agrees or disagrees with choice, I do agree with choice because I think parents should be empowered to make a decision, especially when we're talking about taxpayer dollars. But the bottom line is in Duval County Public Schools, parents have options, charters, private schools, magnet schools. And so that process has led parents to make options outside of traditional public schools, leaving us with a deficit of $50 million. So we make up for that every year with budgeting, but why not create a landscape and a menu of options to tell a parent, if you're not satisfied with this boundary school, what we tell parents, many parents, is, well, if you don't like your boundary school and you're not going to a magnet school, then we don't have a better option for you. That's not a good sales pitch, and it's not the customer service related organization that I think we should be by just limiting, saying, well, you can't go to boundary school. Well, I guess you're not going to a Duval County Public School now, mm-hmm. and you can go somewhere else. That doesn't make sense from a customer service related level.
We should explain just briefly why the school district loses money when students leave. There's funding attached to each student and to the amount of students at a school, correct?
Correct. So when a parent goes to a charter school, the per pupil allocation that's provided from Tallahassee, in addition to any funding linked to an IEP or if it's an English language learner, goes with that student to the charter. Same thing goes with McKay. The McKay scholarship students can go to a charter, or they can even go to a private school, and then the cost of the private school tuition is defrayed by the cost that the student is taking with them, not only through tuition, but through their IEP.
So what I'm hearing you say is that this is about offering choices for parents, but it's also about the traditional public school learning to market itself better and be a little more competitive in what is now a pretty competitive marketplace.
Absolutely. I wish we could go back to the days of neighborhood schools and boundary schools. I think that there was certainly a value to that, for students to be able to walk to their schools, for teachers that lived in the community that taught the kids and interacted with parents even beyond the school walls. Those days don't exist anymore. External factors change that. Charter schools, school grades, McKay scholarships, even magnet schools change that. So we can never go back to a day of the past. We can't go back 10, 15 years ago. And this plan is to modernize our school district, to allow us to evolve so that we can compete with entities that are literally taking kids out of our school system. I'd much rather have a student go from one boundary school to another and remain in our organization than leave, which creates a financial burden and hurts our schools many times academically, because most of the times the students that are leaving are the highest performing students, even in traditionally low performing schools. I also think it's important for the audience to understand that we're doing a lot to support our boundary schools. In no way do I want to dismantle your traditional neighborhood or boundary school. We started an initiative this year called Discover Duval Schools, where we have school visits, where parents, community members can go to their boundary school to see the great things that are happening there. We obviously expanded the expo to include non-magnet schools so they can showcase their work. We've created a thematic approach to our feeder patterns, where we looked at the high school program offerings and went backwards to offer the same kind of programs at the middle school and elementary level so kids would stay in the feeder pattern. We've had kids go to one elementary to their feeder middle to actually see the middle school. A lot of our elementary kids and parents don't even try the middle school because they've heard.
They make an assumption.
They make
about
assumptions.
It.
And middle school kids often don't even go to their feeder high school, even walk in it, because they're basing their negativity on stereotypes and assumptions. So we've had activities so they actually go to those schools. We are about to invest millions of dollars in human capital to retain our best principals, our best teachers, and recruit better principals and teachers into our low-performing schools, which are also our low-enrollment schools. And we've started QZAB, which is a federal funded grant, low-interest bond, to improve technology in low-performing, low-enrolled schools. So we're actually investing more money in these boundary schools that are lower-enrolled to bring kids back, either from the neighborhood or outside, to increase enrollment. But bottom line is, you know, some people will say, well, why so soon? Why so quickly? Because we have to function with a sense of urgency. If a company is looking at their bottom line and their bottom line is going backwards, which ours is, if you're looking at enrollment and you're looking at funding, just based on kids leaving the system, it forces us to do things differently. And I think for too long we haven't done anything differently, and we continue to lose students. That's why the marketing plan is so important to us, because there are great things happening in our schools, and we're not telling that story. And that's part of the marketing plan and attempt to bring kids back to our traditional schools.
Well, I do want to get back to this and some of the questions that board members have had about the plan, but we have a lot of people really interested in this topic. Several people on hold this morning. If you would like to join the conversation, give us a call at 549-2937 with your questions about the open enrollment proposal for Duval County Schools. Dr. Nikolai Vitti is our guest this morning. We're going to go now to Frank in Arlington. Good morning, Frank.
Oh, good morning.
And what is your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Vitti, I think this is actually a remarkable idea I think it's out of the box, and I think that you're exercising true leadership right now by proposing it. My question is that I think that the challenge of this idea, or one of the challenges might be that it's going to leave poor performing schools right now in a maybe in a worse situation than they are now in terms of if parents are pulling their students out of those schools. My question is, do you have any plans to address that? You know, what happens if you know, poor performing schools are less attractive?
All right, thank you, Frank. And Dr. Reedy, this is the question that Connie Hall and Paula Wright, two of the school board members, raised. They are concerned that they're trying to make efforts in some of these schools where enrollment is already low. If you don't give it time for those proposals to work, then these schools, more students will leave those schools.
It's a legitimate concern and one that I deeply respect. I have no intention, and I've said it on record, that I have no intention of closing low-enrolled schools. The reality is coming in as superintendent a year and a half ago, we had severely under-enrolled schools. Many of our schools are functioning at 50%, 60% capacity. I've tried to expand enrollment in those schools through the Discover Duval and the other things that I talked about, and tried to expand pre-K classes, for example, in many of those under-enrolled elementaries to eventually increase enrollment because those kindergartners, pre-K kids, would go and enroll in a kindergarten program. But I have no intention of closing any school based on low enrollment. That's a commitment that I've made for the next 2 years. And in fact, I'm willing to extend that commitment as long as the board doesn't direct me to close those schools based on a financial issue. My whole career over the past 15 years has focused on the urban core. The last thing that I would want attached to my name is a closing of a school, especially in the urban core.
Those schools are important to those neighborhoods.
Yeah, a school is part of the fabric of the community. It's oftentimes the pillar of the community. And what I'm trying to do is restore those boundary schools, but yet deal with the reality that kids are leaving these schools. I mean, if you look at the numbers, for example, of schools that are at 75% or below utilization, right now we have about 3,200 students going to charter schools from those schools in 13-14 alone. And if you look at a combination of magnet transfers and other transfers, so McKay, Opportunity Scholarship, Nickel B, or special transfers, we're talking about 15,000 kids in 13-14 alone that have left these schools. So there are external factors that are leading students to leave these schools, and there's been demographic shifts in the urban core with less people living in the urban core. So there are factors that we can't necessarily control that's leading to low enrolled schools. But my commitment is not to close schools anytime soon. And I would even say through the duration of my superintendency, which hopefully will be a long time, not to close schools on low enrollment unless directed by the board. And I'm actually willing to put that in language with this open enrollment policy to address the concern that Ms. Wright, Dr. Hall have and other community members have about low enrolled schools and open enrollment. But I would just urge everyone, as the caller said, is that this is, you have to stay open-minded. We have to do things differently. And I think for too long, we haven't done things differently. And that's why students have left and they're continuing to leave. And they continue to say, wait, we're not ready yet. It's not responding to the reality of this new choice environment.
But I think this does get back to the timeline question. If you're investing in new computers for these schools, incentive pay for teachers, the concern from some board members, shouldn't we give that a chance to work? Shouldn't we give these schools a fighting chance before we allow more students to leave?
I wish I could say that I could create an embargo, if you will, or have some decree where students wouldn't leave. I wish I could do that and allow the investments to show a return on investment. But the reality is I can't control external choice options. So I can't control the internal option of magnet, but more importantly, I can't control the charter option. And in these schools primarily, we're seeing hundreds of kids leaving. And so even though we might not open up, we could restrict open enrollment for those schools, we still have to deal with the external factor of charters. So what I'm saying is, instead of losing a child to a charter, if the student or the parent doesn't want to go to that boundary school, which is low performing and low enrolled, I'd much rather, and I think as a community, those that are advocates of public education, traditional public education, say, okay, you don't want to go to your boundary school, you visited the school or you've been there and it's not where you, it's not to your liking, why don't you try this other elementary school? So you stay in traditional public education and not leave it to a charter. And I think people are also not recognizing that charter schools are not really excited about us going to open enrollment because it makes us more competitive. And so I think this is changing the conversation and the landscape regarding choice. And ultimately, do we really want to be in a position to tell a parent, we can't give you options? Again, I think that's the antithesis to empowering parents and being a organization that's driven by parent demand, because we're continuing to function from a supply mentality that we're expecting students to go to their neighborhood school. But the reality is we're functioning in a demand environment where parents have options, and we're not being flexible and nimble enough to offer them options within our traditional public schools. And as I said before, we're going to end up like Blockbuster, where we believe we're functioning on supply. The market shifts to a demand outside of Blockbuster, Netflix on demand, and you don't see Blockbusters anymore throughout our community. Well, if we don't shift fast, we're not going to see traditional public schools at every corner of our communities, and they're going to be either private schools or kids taking vouchers to go to private schools or charter schools that don't reflect what was originally intended to offer every child an opportunity through a regular traditional public school education.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Join the conversation, 549-2937. Dr. Nikolai Vitti here talking about his proposal for open enrollment in Duval schools. You can also ask questions about other education topics. We'll go now to Sandra in St. Augustine. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Vitale. I want to congratulate you on this plan because I believe that it makes good sense from both an accountability standpoint and a taxpayer benefit. I'm calling this morning to urge the school board, journalists, and perhaps the Schultz Center for Leadership and Education to look really seriously at the cost to taxpayers that voucher schools, those are tax corporate tax credit voucher schools, the McKay Scholarship schools, and charters are actually costing the property taxpayers of Duval County because the public does not really realize the issues surrounding economies of scale that the taxpayers of Duval County have to pay for because so many students are attending charter schools, voucher schools, or are attending private schools on McKay Fellowship.
Okay, Sandra.
The other issue is accountability. The public doesn't realize that McKay Scholarship schools and voucher schools have no public accountability. Their scores aren't printed in the paper. The public doesn't have access to it. So bravo for this move, but please let's give the people good research on what it's really costing.
All right, Sandra, thank you for the call. And what about what she's saying about the economic impact of charters for taxpayers?
Well, I think she made lots of great points. The reality is that I am supportive of choice. Again, it's consistent with this policy, but I'm also a supporter of accountability and transparency. And I don't know if the average taxpayer understands. For instance, with charter schools, on average, traditional public schools outperform charter schools in Jacksonville. There are some exceptions at certain grade levels and subject areas, but if you aggregate the performance of charter schools and aggregate the performance of traditional public schools, we outperform them. So charter schools were originally envisioned to be incubators of reform and of innovation. and higher levels of performance. We're not necessarily seeing that. On the corporate tax dollars or tax scholarships, I agree. If a child is leaving a public school and going to some private sector, then they should be measured the same way that a child is measured from an accountability point of view, like traditional public schools. I think that's fair and consistent with equal and fair accountability.
All right, let's go now to Bruce in Jacksonville. Good morning, Bruce. What is your question?
Yeah, I have a couple questions and several comments. I think that Dr. Vitti, I certainly appreciate what you're saying, but I think there's a lot of politics here. I was kind of excited when you came on board, but as you've been here, that excitement has significantly diminished. Because many reasons. One being, in public school, I hear you all do a lot of talking about, you know, what you're going to do and, you know, how you're going to improve the school. But hardly ever do I hear anyone mention discipline in these public schools. And you all's attitude of discipline is, you know, you're going to put the deans and the assistant principals in, but you've taken JSO out of the schools and put your own security. That way you all can have control. Y'all don't want to suspend these out of control students, such as example for you all to say, and you in particular to say that the young lady who attacked the other young lady out at Ocean Way, to say that this girl had a right to an education, she does, but she doesn't have a right to be in a regular public school where she can assault and bully other kids.
All right, Bruce.
I have two.
Bruce, thank you very much for your call. He's talking about an Ocean Way middle school student, and the First District Court of Appeals just ruled, okay, a judge said that she could no longer go to Duval County Schools. A Court of Appeals says she can, and you have said that she does have the right to attend public schools.
Yeah, from the beginning, that's the law. And so I was reaffirming from the beginning that only the school board has the authority to expel a child from a public school. And that was my point from the beginning. I think the laws are set in our country for a reason, and I think they need to be implemented with fidelity. And if there's something inadequate in the law, then you go through the right legal procedures to change the law, which has historically happened in
our
country.
The larger discipline issues, yeah. How are you addressing discipline
in
Duval schools?
Well, just to clarify, the JSO shifted to ownership at the district level with officers before I came. It's a shift that I would have supported had I been here, to be clear. I think we have a much better implementation of police activities, if you will, by having them being Duval County Public School employees, because they take a different role. By being in a school system, they think more like an educator. They think more as a social worker, a guidance counselor, and less as a police officer. And I think that's important because you have to establish those relationships. On the suspension issue, we still suspend students when appropriate based on the code of conduct. We still do outdoor suspensions. We do more in-school suspensions because we want to see kids involved in school and not away from school. Statistically, when kids are given outdoor suspensions, they're more likely to be truant and they're more likely to get involved in crime at the city level. But discipline is an ongoing process. It's not something that will be clear and clearly done in 1 year. It's a process, and most of the discipline problems are an extension of what is or isn't happening at home. And so we are doing a lot, as he mentioned, the deans, in-school suspension, training, and we're even changing our code of conduct. We're engaging community members on that revision. We'll be taking it to the board in the spring to be clear with what the infraction is and what the consequence is in a progressive discipline model. I to go back to the court case. I support the overturning of the expulsion. The board has a right to do that, and I want to again remind everyone that the incident took place outside of the school campus, not on, which changes the landscape of the issue.
And neither student involved in that fight are even enrolled in Duval schools anymore, correct?
Correct. And even after the incident, once there was an injunction to allow the student to return to public education, we did not return her at the same school as the two individuals involved in the situation went to different schools.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that we do all the time. I do want to make a point regarding parents. It's interesting because the parents that I've come across since I've announced this proposal have been overwhelmingly in favor of it. And I think that there's a big difference between what parents are saying and sometimes what others are saying. And we have to go back to hearing the voice of parents. Those are our consumers. Those are our clients. And although I clearly understand the concerns, most parents, in fact, interestingly enough, support the proposal and want us to go even farther by offering, let's say, transportation to a parent that goes from one boundary school to another. Now, financially, I don't think we're at a place to do that. Maybe that can happen in the next year or 2 years when we really do a deeper study of the financial impact. But that just speaks to the yearning that I think that the community has with more choice options within the traditional public school setting.
In discussions about this, I've heard some criticism from some parents that, okay, so I have the option to send my child to other schools, but the schools that I'd really like for my child to go to are full. So does this really open up? Are there really other good options out there where there are open seats for students to attend?
Yeah, and we never want to create an overcrowded situation in the school that leads to many other problems. It's a legitimate critique. And I think that just needs to push us even more with looking at programs across the district. It needs to push us to think about new schools throughout the district. But that criticism is more an indication of the demand for more choice options than anything else, and the need to think beyond just a boundary neighborhood solution to the loss of enrollment problem.
So for those people who feel strongly about this, would like to speak out to the school board, April 1st is the meeting on this issue?
We posted the proposed changes a month before, because that's part of our board policy, is if we're recommending any policy changes, it has to be part of the board agenda the month before, and we did that. So we did have a few individuals come to the board meeting last month in March to speak to the policy issue. So we've been following procedures on that. But we do have three upcoming community meetings that are perfect venues to express their support or concerns regarding the policy. March 24th, we have a budget meeting at Atlantic Coast. March 25th, we have a budget meeting at Raines High School, and March 27th, we have a budget meeting at Gilbert Middle School. So we'll be talking about the 13-14 budget proposals for 14-15, but obviously the open enrollment proposal is linked to the budget, and it's a great opportunity for folks to come out to ask questions about the open enrollment policy, what it means for them specifically as a parent, or what it means for the district in general. I will be there along with board members to take questions and to talk through the issue.
I do want to get one more call in here. This is going to have to be quick. Chuck in San Marco, I understand you're a school employee.
Yes, I was just wondering, you talk about people going to the schools. How many high schools actually have an FCAT grade of an A that meet less than 95% enrollment? Because you talked about students want to go to Stanton, Paxson, Atlantic Coast, but how many of those schools really are enrollment under 95%?
Again, getting back to that criticism that this seems to some people like more of a political move than actually offering real choice.
Yeah, it's hardly a political move. Again, when you're looking at the number of kids that are leaving low enrollment in low performing schools and seeing the number that are going to charters from those schools, it's even to go from one low enrollment school to another is a choice option, and lots of parents would like to use. But to answer the question directly, there are few. There are some. What's mentioned is Stanton and Paxson. Those are magnet schools that have specific criteria to get into those schools, which won't change. Now, there are schools like a Lee High School, for instance, off the top of my head, Sandalwood. Lee High School is an A school. So there are opportunities to go to Lee. We have more A schools than we've ever had before, even outside of magnet schools. So off the top of my head, Lee is one, and there are others that are A schools that are not magnet schools that would be open to low enrollment. And the same goes for middle schools and high schools. But I think everyone believes that this means that they can go to Stanton or Paxson or La Villa or Douglas Anderson. Though the criteria to get in those schools remain, which is linked to high performance academically or high performance artistically. That won't change, but it certainly opens up the door for other transfer options.
Well, Dr. Vitti, clearly a lot of interest in this topic, so thank you very much for coming today to answer questions.
Thank you for having me.